This talk is brought to you by iBiology.org, and this audio was taken from a video available on our website.
Hi, my name is Bill Lindstedt. I'm the Assistant Vice Chancellor for Career Advancement, International and Postdoctoral Services at UC San Francisco. And we're here today to talk about compensation negotiation when you get that awesome first industry scientist position. There's several sections to this workshop. First of all is what happens when you get asked about compensation during the interview. So you're sitting in a final interview and the person who's about to hire you says, you know, what happens if we move forward to a job offer? How much do you want to get paid? Difficult question. We'll talk about that. Second, what to say when they call you and give you the job offer and ask you for feedback about what the content was after they describe it. How do you get in and out of that conversation gracefully? Then we'll talk about job offer content. So you get the job offer letter. What's in that letter? What are the different components of that letter? And then which of those components are negotiable and which of those are not? And finally, what makes most people most nervous about this whole process is the process of negotiation. So when you're going to call that employer back and tell them you would like more of something, how do you do that gracefully and in a way that maintains the relationship but gets you what you want? So first of all, the students and postdocs that I talk with usually approach the negotiation process as if it's a really complicated affair that involves lots of twists and turns. And actually, this diagram is designed to help simplify that process. So you'll see there's three columns. There's the negotiation item, so what you're going to ask for. And the questions are, is that a must-have item? In other words, if you don't get it, then you're going to walk away from the job and turn it down? Or is it a nice to have, which is I'm going to ask for this because I would be nice to have more of something, and I may accept a job if they don't give it to me, or I may not. And then the employer response is basically what they're going to respond to your request, and regardless if it's a must have or a nice to have, there's only four possible responses. They're either going to say yes or no or maybe or probably not. And then the action column, you can see, is designed to help you figure out which of those four responses might drive to a particular response. And there's a handout that's attached to the video series that will give you more details, so we won't go into all of the different responses. But it's really a pretty simple process of you deciding if it's something you must have or it's nice to have, and then waiting for the employer's response, and then dictating your response based according to this flowchart. So hopefully this is helpful in simplifying that. So let's just jump into what happens in that interview question. You know, it's probably a good thing if they're asking you, so if we were to move forward to the job offer stage, what are your salary requirements? So in the best case scenario, this never comes up because strategically, it doesn't really help you to give them a number that's a direct figure. Sometimes the question will come up and the human resource interviewer is just asking the question to fill out a diagram or a table or something. That question does frequently come up, but it's better if it doesn't. And if it doesn't come up, you should not bring it up in the interview. You can respond and negotiate after the offer comes. But frequently the question does come up, and so your job in this case is really to just not quote any particular figure. I'll give you an example here in a minute. And then the third best is to give some kind of figure if they really press you based on the research that you've done. And we'll talk about that shortly. So your initial response, if they say, you know, how much money do you need to make, should be, you know, I'm very interested in this position because of the science, or the team seems like it's going to be a really great group to work with. You know, and if we were to move forward to an offer, I just hope that it'll be made for a salary amount that's competitive for my background and my experience. So basically, you didn't say anything. You gave them a couple of lines of response, but you were able to avoid saying any number. And sometimes the person interviewing you will just mark down they're negotiable. They're, you know, you're flexible on your salary. However, they might say, well, can you be a little more specific? And in that case, you should say, you know, again, the most important thing for me is to be able to accept a position where I can work with this particular science or work with this team. So say something about the position. And these issues are more critical to me than the exact salary figure. But from the research I've been able to do, it seems like salaries are falling in the mid to upper 90s for a position like this with a major employer and for someone with my general background. So the question often comes up then, where do I get that number? Should I look on salary.com or Glassdoor? And those resources are helpful, but not as helpful as if you reach out to a scientist who's been in industry for a while, or two or three preferably, and ask them, I'm interviewing for this kind of position, what do you think should be the general salary range for that a job like that? And once you get a few data points, that's more useful to quote in a conversation like this than is, a number from a website. So even better, you get the job offer, and the company calls you and describes, it's probably going to either be the human resources person that you've been working with or the scientist who will be your boss. And they'll tell you, terrific having you on site for a full day of interviews. Everyone really thought your job talk was great. They'll say some good things about how excited they are to have you on board. And then they'll say, we're going to move to a job offer, and here are the conditions of that job offer. And they'll start describing those. Sometimes they just email this information to you, but most often they want to have a happy conversation with you and congratulate you on getting the job offer. It's a good time. However, usually after they describe the content of the job offer, they'll ask you for some feedback. So is this start date, it's a little different than what we described when you interviewed. Is that going to be okay? Or what do you think about that salary level? Is that going to be enough to keep you going? No matter what they ask you, it's not helpful for you to respond with anything specific. Your whole job, when you get that job offer and they call you on the phone and tell you about these things and ask you for feedback, is to say, this is really exciting, but at this point, I just like to see everything in writing and I'll try to respond as quickly as possible. So even if there's something that you really, really need and it's not in that job offer, don't bring it up now. And even if it's way above the salary level that you even dreamed of, it's still not good to say, yay, I got a job offer and it's more than I expected. Yes. So there's nothing you can do in that moment that is going to help you respond as well as you could if you had a time to think about it and call them back later. So here's what you might say. This is really great news. I also felt like there was great potential fit when I was visiting your company. And I really appreciate everything you've done so far in this process. Would it be possible to send everything you've just described in a quick email? It would be really helpful if I could just take a look at all the details, and then I'll be able to organize any questions I might have and respond by the date they tell you. And usually that's going to be a week or less. So this is the best way to respond. And then you'll get the offer letter, and you'll think about how you're going to respond. We'll describe that later, how you have that call back. So then you get the job offer. They'll send it to you in an email. Sometimes they'll FedEx it to you. And the offer letter will include a number of different components, the job title and classification. So scientist one, or senior scientist, or associate scientist, some level of classification within a job title. The start date, it'll probably say, confirm who your supervisor is. And then there'll be a section for money where they talk about, the salary and if there's a signing bonus or an annual bonus structure, stock options. And then there will be some content about benefits. Usually these offer letters are a couple of pages. And some of these items are negotiable, some are not. But I thought it'd be helpful to step back and take a look at the money components of that job offer letter. So first of all, how do entry-level non-academic salaries work? Typically, they're a range within a classification. So for all scientist ones in our company, we pay people between $90,000 and $100,000. And if you wanted $110,000, if that was your goal, that's not a scientist one job at our company. So that has to be some other issue. And by the same token, a lot of postdocs and students are worried about what if I tell them ahead of time that I'm a postdoc making $50,000, are they going to pay me $60,000 when other people are making $90,000 at that company? No. So if it's a $90,000 to $100,000 job, they'll keep you in that bracket. So you can feel safe about that. And then typically also they have, at a larger company, they'll have a pretty clear idea of, for an entry-level person, coming right out of a university setting, research setting, we're going to start somebody, you know, at the 30th percentile within that range. So they have a pretty specific idea before they ever interview you of how much they're willing to pay you, and those ranges are pretty narrow. We'll say a little bit more about that. Sometimes when you ask for more money, the person you're negotiating with will say, you know, for equity reasons, we can't really move much on this salary. And what that means is if the range was 90, 100,000, they offered you 93,000 and you wanted in the upper 90s, and there's somebody who's been there longer in the department making 95,000 and you asked for 98, they probably can't go there because then it would be perceived to be unfair to that person who's been there longer in that same job title doing the same job that you'll be doing. So that's when someone says, for equity reasons, we really can't move, they're usually signaling that issue, and it's I usually trust that. Another interesting thing that a lot of people don't know about is companies come to their salary offer numbers based on benchmarking information, especially in large science employment markets. So, you know, in the U.S., San Diego, San Francisco, Boston, some of the bigger biotech markets, they have consulting firms that sell their services to the biotech companies. And for example, you know, Genentech or Amgen will say, we're going to pay this company so much money, and we're also going to give them a big dump of all our data on salaries and aggregated information, so not your personal information, but how much is someone who's a postdoc with 3 years of experience at a university setting who's just coming in to our scientist one level job, they know that based on what everybody else is paying, they know how much to offer you in a competitive sense. So these companies will then collect all this information and send it back out to the employers so that they know how to bracket their salaries. What that means really is that generally the salaries offered are really pretty tight brackets, and it means nobody's trying to take an advantage of you. They want you to be happy. They probably don't have a lot of room to move on their salaries, but often when you ask for more, because they want you to be happy and they want to know that you're happy coming into the job, often we see that when someone asks for more, they get a little bit more. In our office at UCSF, once we did a survey of people who had used our services, had gotten a job offer in an industry, asked for more. How much more was that? We found that it was 3 to 7%. So that doesn't sound like a big increase, but if you're making a $100,000 job offer and you move it to $105,000, that's a lot of money. So it's worth considering, should I ask for more, and how do I do that? People also have questions about stock offers, and usually the job offer letter will say, you'll either say the language that it's a stock grant or an option to purchase stock at a future date. A stock grant means, you know, if the letter says, you know, when you sign this and come on board with our company, part of your compensation will be a grant of 5,000 shares of stock or 1,000 shares of stock. What that means is they're giving you that piece of ownership in the company. It's great. It's not usually too common. More often what you see is an option to purchase stock at a future date at a discounted price. That price is called the strike price, and the amount of the strike price is usually dictated by the value of a share on your first month of work. But that's something you might want to ask about when you're getting more information. What is the strike price right now, and how is that determined? It'd be a good question to ask the employer. Usually also there's a vesting period, so that means over a period of 4 years usually, each anniversary that you have with a company, you could trade in, you could exercise your option to purchase 25% of that stock, so that over the 4 years, by the time you've reached your fourth anniversary, you could have traded in all of your stock and benefited from the value of that if it's selling at a higher price than you could buy it for. These are all questions you might ask if they're not detailed in the offer letter. But the thing that's usually negotiable of anything is just the amount of stock that's being provided. And then sometimes people ask about one-time cash bonuses or annual bonus plans. The things to look out for are, first question is, is the bonus, is an annual bonus different from a one-time signing bonus? And if it's a one-time signing bonus, the question is this related to a moving expenses or is this separate? So you should clarify those things and what the money is used for. And then you should be clear on when the money is being given to you. Is it when you sign? Is it after, you know, your first month or after your first year? Is it tied to the length of time that you stay at the company? So is if you leave, if you take the job offer and get the signing bonus and leave in 6 months, do you have to pay that company back? So these are things that you should be you should clarify if they're not written in the letter. And then when you think about what are the items that might be requested in terms of all the items that are in your job offer letter, typically the things that are most negotiated that we see are start date and things related to the money, salary, signing bonus, or stock option or grant. It's unusual that you'd be able to say, you know, you interviewed me for a scientist one job. It would be really great if I could have a scientist two position anyhow. We have seen this happen very rarely. Another thing that's very negotiable is the relocation package. So if you have to move across the country and bring family and household goods with you, a lot of times companies are very flexible around those needs. One thing that's almost never, I'd say rarely negotiable, is vacation time. And so we've seen companies be flexible on trading vacation for salary. So unpaid time off might be something you would negotiate, but even that's pretty rare. But for most people, if you're like, you know, you offered me 3 weeks of vacation, it'd be great to have 5 weeks. Everybody thinks that, but most companies are not going to be very flexible around that. So let's move on into the negotiation process, which is how do you ask for the things that you want and need in a way that maintains the relationship and also gets you what you want and need. And usually this conversation will happen on the phone, if at all possible. It's just easier to make that conversation, you know, read the other person's cues than if you're writing emails back and forth. It just tends to go more smoothly. And usually the negotiation will happen with the person who signs your job offer letter. That's usually a signal that that's who you're supposed to contact back if you need more information. Sometimes that'll be your future boss, the scientist who signs the letter. Sometimes it'll be the human resource recruiter that you've worked with. Occasionally we see job offer letters from the CEO of a major company, and in that case you probably go ahead and call back the recruiter or the boss, not the CEO. So in this process you'll have the conversation. You're going to start out positive and mention how much you like some aspect of the position that's not related to the job offer. So the team or the science that they're doing or the products they're working on are really exciting. You're bought into the mission of the company. You can start out on something positive not related to an item in the job offer letter, and then you'll give a transition or agenda setting statement. So I have a couple of items to discuss after reading over the job offer letter that you sent, or I have two requests and a couple of clarification points to go through. And the purpose of this is so that you don't end each item and then say, and another thing, and the person listening to you gets fatigued. So you tell them the agenda up front. And then you'll start asking for the things that you want from this, and you'll use leverage, it's called in negotiating parlance. And the leverage is the logic that you're going to use to pry what you want out of the company. And so obviously the best leverage is always another job offer. And often the question comes up, does that other job offer have to be for more money in order for it to be useful in the negotiation if I'm asking for more money from company two? And the answer is no. There's all kinds of things that you could refer to in company number one's offer letter that would sound attractive, and then you're just asking company two, is there anything you can do to make your offer, you know, more attractive and make it more clear for me to accept your offer? So if you don't have another competing job offer, the next best leverage is statistics that you've been able to find or data that you'd be able to quote that signals that their job offer is a little bit low. And typically, people want to go straight to the internet and look for data from salary.com or Glassdoor. And for a variety of reasons, our suggestion is to use anecdotal information that you've collected from several different scientists, like we said before, and to say, You know, I've talked with several people who have moved into positions like this in the past, and it seems like, based on the information I've gotten from them, this offer is a little bit on the low side. And that's going to sound better than I checked Glassdoor and they said that job offers should be more. Or salary.com said positions for biotech scientists, you know, are, you know, paid more for this. And there's a variety of reasons why those might not be the best ways to go. And those all have to do with the information that the HR people will know. So some of the sites don't account for geographical information and how the cost of living varies or how much time people have spent in the positions as they're feeding information into these jobs, how much seniority they have. And so for those reasons, those websites might not be that useful for this conversation. And finally, if you don't have data that says that the job offer is low either, you can still ask for something more. And so you're in a point in your career where you've been working really hard in a low-paying training position for a long time. Make sure that you're taking care of yourself and getting what you need from this process. And we call that why not try leverage. So this is where you say, you know, in order to get myself started in my new professional life, it would be really helpful if you could provide, you know, a signing bonus that would help me put a down payment on a car because I'm going to have to commute to my new job and I don't currently own a car. Or we've seen scientists ask for money to upgrade their wardrobe. I've been working in a lab, you know, wearing T-shirts and jeans, and this position is going to require me to dress a little bit more professionally. Would it be possible to have some one-time money that would help me get started? So these might sound like weird things to ask for, but it's okay. At this point, the company wants you, and you need to be in the position of asking for what you need and see if you can take care of yourself. So after you come up with your leverage, then ask for what you want in general terms. You'll have a conversation about whether they can do that or not, or how difficult it might be. And if you're not going to completely walk away from the job offer, then end encouragingly, because there will be some work that they have to do on their end to see if they can give you what you want. Summarize verbally, follow up by email. You know, it was great talking with you today. My understanding was that, you know, I asked for these things and you're going to check on these things. I look forward to when we hear back from you. And always make sure you express appreciation for the work that the person is doing behind the scenes, because it is often a lot of work to go back, check equity issues, see if it's a fair amount, reissue the letter, check budgets. And so it seems like they're just typing in some new numbers on an offer letter, but in fact, it may be a lot of work. And then you'll decide if you want to take the job offer to begin this, like if you're thinking about how to start this conversation, the first thing you need to know is go into it knowing if you're likely to accept the job or not. So we talked about the nice to have versus must haves. Be really clear about what those are at the beginning. Most of the people I talk to, most of the graduate students and postdocs moving into this first position, especially if they don't have another job offer, they go into this conversation pretty sure they're going to take the job and they're just asking for something more to see if they can make it better for them. You don't need to negotiate to boost your ego. So if they say, this is, you know, all these items, we don't negotiate, I would take that for what it's worth and probably not do, see if you can get more just to boost your ego. But it's okay after a long period of working really hard as a graduate student or postdoc to ask for what you want and need. And then super important to prepare for this conversation. So carefully review the job offer letter, decide what things you're going to ask for in what order, write those items out in bullet point format, and then practice with a partner, get some feedback on how your conversation sounds, because this is an important conversation. Even if you only get a few percent more in terms of salary or, you know, a couple thousand dollars in terms of a one-time bonus, that's a lot of money, and it can really help you over the course of your career. And so it's a really important conversation to prepare for. And then a typical list of items might look something like this. You know, when we interviewed, we talked about a one-month start date, and yet the job offer says 2 weeks. You know, I need to get clarification on that because it's a big deal for me. And then You might move on to salary and say, you know, they offered me this much and I was really hoping for a little bit more. I'll ask about that next. And then maybe I'll ask for a signing bonus depending on if I get the extra salary money or not. And then at the end, I didn't really understand the stock offer plan, and so I'm just going to ask for a clarification about that. So that would be a pretty typical set of items for a discussion like this. And then you'll initiate this discussion, and you'll start out with something positive. First of all, I just wanted to say again how thrilled I am to have received this job offer. And then your transition statement. So I do have a number of questions. These run the gamut from salary issues to the start date. I've outlined two main points along with a couple of clarification questions concerning the items presented in the email you sent to me. Is this a good time to talk? Should we do this by email? You can ask them what their practice is. And then you'll ask for what you want and mention your leverage. Well, my first question is about the salary. The letter you sent specified a salary of $90,000. I've done some information gathering online and through colleagues at similar positions, and it seems as if the going rate for this sort of position in the Bay Area and for someone with my background is more in the range of the mid-90s. Is there any flexibility in the salary level for this position that might bring it closer to the mid-90s? So you can see that person was not very specific, so they didn't say, I really need $96,000, because that sounds kind of random. And they went through a lot of detail to make it clear that they had good information. Someone in the same location, same type of position, similar backgrounds, so that the person that you're negotiating with doesn't come back and say, well, that's how do we know if you got the right kind of data? So tell them up front you got good data, but don't be super specific about the request. Basically, you're asking them, is there anything else you can do for me? And then you'll have this conversation about why it might be difficult or why they can or cannot do it. In this scenario, it was going to be kind of difficult. And so the person says, you know, I understand now why we're locked into the start date, and it needs to remain as it is in the letter you sent me. And I really appreciate your willingness to check in on the flexibility around salary, you know, especially since, you know, you'll refer back to what they talked about, especially since, you know, it's going to require talking to the boss about equity issues within the group. You know, I'll be prepared to respond quickly when I hear back from you. I'm really excited about wrapping this up also, and I appreciate your help in getting together the information that I need to finalize my decision. Is there anything else you need from me at this point? And then you'll write a response to them that says, thank you for the conversation. Here's the things that I understand you're going to do. Here are the things I'm going to do. And you'll wait for them to get back to you. And at this point, that conversation is generally over. So for entry-level positions, coming straight out of a research position in academia and moving to industry, they probably expect you to ask for something more, and so that's perfectly okay if you do, but they wouldn't expect this conversation to go on, you know, for 2 weeks and you keep asking for different things in each conversation. So basically, they give you an offer, you ask for something more, and they say yes or no, and then you either accept the job offer or politely turn it down at that point. So this is the way these conversations usually unfold. There's a couple things you might want to read. One is a general book on negotiation strategies. It's not just for scientists, and it's not necessarily about salaries. It's about negotiating as a way of life and having conversations that help you get what you want. It's called Getting to Yes, and it's kind of the accepted expert book on this topic. There's also a very helpful video and skills guide at the Center for the Advancement of Women's Leadership at Stanford's website, which is also included in the slide pack. So we hope you find those two pieces of information really useful. And then just to wrap up with some of the principle we've talked about, focus on maintaining the relationship as you go through this process by opening and closing each conversation with appreciation, enthusiasm. Make sure that they know that you'd like to take the position if you can get these things taken care of. Always clarify at the end of the conversation what you thought was discussed, and then go ahead and make sure that you send a quick email thanking them for the conversation and bullet pointing what's going to happen. And just remember to negotiate with integrity. You should be asking for what you need and getting the most out of this process you can, but it's not about just negotiating for the heck of it. Make sure that you try to balance satisfaction for what you need with maintaining that relationship, and you'll have a productive, useful conversation. So thank you for listening, and I hope you find this workshop useful.
Visit us at iBiology.org for more free talks from the world's top scientists. Funding is provided by the National Science Foundation and the National Institute of General Medical Sciences.